separating like who you become and then the number in the bank or the number on the scale or the whatever or the number of downloads, all these things, like reminding yourself of like you becoming, you doing the thing for the thing to be done is a good enough reason to do stuff.
Constructing your life is about much more than just building a bank account. Each week, join mindset coach Austin Linney as he interviews guests who are constructing their dream lives and impacting the world around them on a daily basis. If you're an entrepreneur or wanting to start a business, or you just want to hear motivating stories of how others have overcome the odds, you are in the right place. And now for your host, Austin Linney.
Guys, welcome back to Construct Your Life. This is Austin Linney. I got my man, Steve, in the house. And before I introduce him, life is an interesting thing. When people say certain things, you know, if you're in the restaurant business or you sold wine as long as I have, you could say certain things that signify, okay, that guy's been around the block. So when we met Steve and he starts quoting like philosophy, we're like in a sales training and Steve's quoting like philosophy and stuff. All three of us are like going, okay, this cat's a little different. Like he's dropping some like deep philosophical stuff. You can see the pictures in the background, obviously, or another indication. For a guy who has, for lack of a better word, spent a career in high ticket sales at the highest levels, you don't make the mold of the Lambos and the penthouses, you know, and that's why we got along so well. Yeah. So it's awesome to dig in. I want to hear more about your story, but I just had to tell that because it was so great. But but yeah, if you want to tell people a little bit about yourself and we'll get going from there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know jack shit about wines, and so I'm glad that didn't become a wine analogy.
No.
It's like he's quite a nice Pinot Noir. That's the only wine I know. So I had my own weight loss coaching company and did a few million dollars in sales in a very short time period. It was like 18 months or something like that. And then graduated from that, moved on to becoming a full-time salesperson, managed a couple sales teams for bigger names in the space, and then went on to be basically a business and sales team consultant for probably the biggest company in the industry. And then I had the best client results, had the highest upsells, had like I have all the company records there. And now I just run sales teams and consult business owners on living a life that actually brings them joy and having a business that they actually want to have instead of one that the internet tells them they should have. So that's what I spend my time doing.
So sales are an interesting thing, right? Because what I've noticed more, and I'd love to get your insight on this, because you and I have been around the block a little bit. I had my own businesses. We're doing a different kind of private equity, bigger businesses now, many employees, larger scale. But back in the day, and I'll just use COVID as a reference. Like I invest in real estate. So like I'm a speculator and I'll take risk. But when the fundamentals don't make sense, like I'm out. Okay, this price doesn't make sense. I'm not going to play the game. You know, some people would say, why are you sitting out? The issue that I see in business right now is with AI and sales and marketing is that this thing changes week to week, like with different ways to do it. And, you know, they're saying, oh, well, now it's not high ticket, it's group sales. And there's just so much. It's like a diet, right? I know you're big into your health. Like, are eggs good or eggs not good? Is bacon good? Is bacon not good? I don't know. And I think people's appetite for sales is I hate sales because this one time in my life I was tricked by buying this gym membership that I could never get out of, and I hate every salesman that exists on the planet for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Nice. I'll start with the last thing you said, which is I also hate sales. That's why I made a career helping people buy things.
Okay, lay that out for me. See, this is what I'm talking about. Yes, go.
So I don't sell anybody anything. I just make sure that they make the best decision for them. So I'm not a salesperson. I just help people make decisions. And I just help people buy stuff. And so the first thing that you said there is that, like, sales is always changing. Same thing with diets. It's like very little has changed in terms of how we communicate with each other. over the past 3,000 years. Like, we went from like old English to Gen Z English, where it's like we say vibe and energy instead of like contingent, whatever. However, the way in which we communicate and the emotions that we experience, that we give off, like just straight empathy, I don't think has changed all that much. And so, like, at the root of human communication and overall just helping, like, influence as a whole, if you look at what influence is and how it's existed over thousands of years, there's been three things. There's expertise. You will listen to people who know something more than you do. There's empathy. You will feel understood by the person who you think understands your situation. And then there's expertise. Or sorry, then there's enthusiasm, which is you just get fired up for the guy who wants to run into the war. Like, you will just die because somebody else is so excited and believes in their cause so much that it's like contagious. And so I also do not like sales, because I think that sales has become a magical bag of tricks in which people try to say all these weird words to get somebody to give them their credit card. Mm-hmm. And then when they don't have a credit card, they help them sign up for one, which I think is gross. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that the people who the product helps receives the product. And so then we could talk about like qualified leads and qualified prospects and like, do you even say the right things to attract the right people? Which is like a big issue that people run into with their own business now, of like, they have to pivot so much after they've gone so deep of like, we just straight up have the wrong, we're just straight up doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, I hate my business is the conversation that I've had a lot recently with business owners. And so I don't think much has changed. I think that there's noise that has there's always going to be the new thing that people try to sell you. And my stance has always just been that, like, same thing with calories. It's been the exact same thing for however long humans have been around. Humans have influenced humans for as long as there's been humans to influence. It's like the more that we deviate from that, the more complicated and made up we just make this. It's like it's all the same. And oftentimes, if you ask a question, there's probably an old dead dude in a toga that figured it out thousands of years ago. And so I would just listen to what they have to say.
Guys, let me take a minute to tell you about my buddies over at LeadHub, Ben and Aaron, the best humans I know. Not only are they amazing at marketing for trade companies, but Ben started his HVAC company in his garage, sold it for multi-million dollars. So when this guy talks, I listen. When we took over Dietz Mechanical, we had 22 reviews in 22 years. In 7 short months, we went from 22 reviews to 107. We went from a 4.2 to a 4.7. We tripled our Facebook presence and we tripled our calls. If you're an HVAC, plumbing, electric, landscaping company, and you're looking for a no BS approach to marketing, you're looking for people who have done it before, you got to go to leadhub.net.
Well, and it's interesting, right? God, so much good stuff there. It's interesting, right? Is like the older I get, I'm 41 now, and
you don't look a day over 40.
I feel great. So I've read a lot of books. I've read a lot of business books. I've interviewed almost, 700 people, right? I've talked to people. I've been around places. I talked to people that have 40 business, 100 business, guys like you, etc. And I have no appetite for business right now. To consume business is what I mean. And I find myself digging into creativity, older books. I like to watch Inside the Actor's Studio, like how they come up with their character. And I went to an event recently and I realized that like really all life is about is like telling a story. And then do you believe in said story, right? Because what you're talking about is the fundamentals, right? Like the problem that we have in society right now is it Airbnb right now? Is it, should you post on LinkedIn right now? Or no, it's Instagram. No, it's TikTok. But you meet these guys that have been around the block for a long time, like you're stating, and they're like, man, I just like crushed trucking for like 40 years and I'm like worth $1 billion. And they never like got distracted by, even my dad will tell you he sold his practice for multi-millions. Like he didn't invest in real estate. He was just really good at what he did. Mm-hmm. Now he invested in real estate like afterwards. And I think that's what you're talking about is we just get distracted and lose ourselves in the core of what makes people tick. It's really just human psychology at the end of the day.
Yeah. It takes an ungodly amount of time to do anything successfully.
Hmm.
And I think that a lot of people deviate from that before they get to any place that they would get rewarded for it. So like the first 20 hours that you do anything, you're going to suck and you're not going to get rewarded for it. This is oftentimes like why I come in of like when I have a sales rep who needs to learn how to do sales and they've never done sales before, the first 20 hours, they're going to do everything wrong and they're going to hate it. They're not going to have a good time. And so it's like the only thing that I need to do is be pointing out the things that they're doing right so that they can understand that they are, in fact, doing things right. And then they can do more of those things and then more right things start to happen. And so the first 0 to 20 hours feels hard and impossible for pretty much any task you take on, unless you have somebody who's like high five, like unless you have an external source of reward to help you out during that process. And then hour like 20 to 10,000, it's just volume. And the plan that you pick matters. Like, just don't pick a dumb plan, basically. Like, pick a plan that is like at least agreed upon. And then like 99% of your success is just going to come down to like, how easy can you make it to stick to the plan? Mm-hmm. And if you can just make it as easy as possible to stick to the plan, I think that's where like the highest percentage of success comes from. Like, can you make your environment operate or help you operate in the most effective way possible to stick to the plan? Mm-hmm. So it's like, once you pick the plan, stick to the plan. It's the thing that nobody talks about. It's like, here, I have this great, like, nobody sells you on sticking to the plan. They all just sell you on a new plan, a new system. This thing's dead. Do the group funnel. Do this. Short form funnel. Do this. So it's like, oh my God. If you do anything for 10 years and you don't make money, I'd be very surprised. Mm-hmm. If you do an activity that has made money in the past for other people and you do that for 10 years and you don't make money, come talk to me, because it just won't happen.
How long have you been? I know, because I've been watching your stories a little bit. How long have you been working out? Like, what you consider like working out? Because you're ripped, and so I'm trying to make a point here. Like, how long have you worked out? Worked out?
I have worked out 6 days a week, often twice a day, since I was 14. I'm now 27.
Okay, so there you go. And so when I got sober and I lost 70 pounds, like, there were 20 years of drinking heavily, eating crap food. Yeah. And here I am 5 years from now, you know, really dedicating about a year or two to my like working out. Don't really love lifting weights. And I'm like, why don't I look this way? And I'm like, well, if you spend as long as you did on drinking, you know, but then come talk to me in 20 years and see how healthy
I am. And like, you're still probably in the place where it's like you haven't fallen in love with lifting weights.
No.
And it's like, does 100%. That mean that you stop lifting weights, or you find ways in which you can love lifting weights?
Exactly.
Like, do you know what would make you like lifting weights?
I have no idea, because I don't like it.
Okay. What would make you like it?
I tell you what I took one time that like I've never, I felt good for like 2 days afterwards.
Yeah.
I took a really hard, like the hardest form of Pilates I've ever taken in San Diego with a friend. And like, I've thought about that like every day for like 5 years. Like, I loved that class. Like, it was very hard. I didn't know what I was doing. I felt very uncomfortable. I never sweat so much in my entire life.
Great.
Like, my walking, like, I walk 45 minutes since I got sober. I walk 45 minutes every morning, never missed it, single day.
You know? Great job.
Like, that's my thing. But like, I'm not the type of guy where like, hey, I'm going to work out like 3 days a week and that's it. I need to be doing something active every day. It's the way my mind works. And so I've kind of like stuck to that, and that's great. But like, emotionally, there's been some baggage like internally that I'm working through with a coach and everything like that. But like, I've never got jazzed about lifting weights. And now that I'm saying it out loud, I feel like it was a lot of like football practice, like back in middle school and high school, and like how bad those coaches were. And they just did the quintessential like stupid workouts like from the 1980s. And I think that's always stuck with me.
Oh, yeah. So you just have more punishing experiences associated to weightlifting than you do positive ones.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. So I think a really good question for you is like, what would make your weightlifting sessions rewarding?
To have a plan and actually like execute on it instead of just loosey goosey.
Nice. Do you have a training log?
Of course not. No.
This seems like a good place to start. And so it's like, if you can make working out rewarding by literally just checking the box of I did this thing, I did this thing, I did this thing. Next week, I'm going to do this thing heavier. And if you just give yourself identification of progress and you gamify it, that makes things more rewarding inherently. So for example, like when I wanted to start, like I've been putting up more content and I knew, like I went in and I was like, okay, the first 3 months is just guessing. Like I'm just spaghetti at the wall. Like I'm going to figure out what works, who cares. And I was looking at the videos and the response time and how many people and hours and watch time. And it was like something ridiculous. It was like 20,000 people had watched my content in 3 days. I just sat with that. I was like, that's like an arena full of people.
Yeah.
That I cannot, that is absurd. That is so many people. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to get reward because I had data to give me feedback on the behavior that I did. And so a lot of times people just don't have any meaningful data associated to the behaviors that they're trying to do. Therefore, they don't know if they're making progress. Therefore, they can't attribute, are they getting rewarded from the environment or not? And so it's like, you have to actually educate yourself. Okay, well, what things about the thing I'm doing is going to provide me a reward so that I will continue to do it. Mm-hmm. And then ideally I will like doing it. And so it's like people like wait to like to do stuff, but it's like you can implement things in your environment that can increase the chances that you do like doing it. And I just define liking as there's a high probability you will do it again. Mm-hmm. And so it's like if you remove punishment, like are you still in the point? Honest question. Don't mean to call you out in your own show, but it's like, are you still at the point where it's like you have to put punishment in place of weightlifting? So it's like, if you don't go to the gym, you're like, oh fuck.
No,
like, I feel bad. No. Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. That's where a lot of people stay stuck is they go like, there's a lot of like, or else.
I call that toxic fuel that will never keep you going. Like that, I'll be honest with you. Like I was a part of a mastermind, different mastermind, and like wildly successful people in there.
Yeah.
But it was like 60% was that like, bro, dude, I own a gym or a supplement company. And they're just like total anger. Yeah. They make $5 million a year, but like they're miserable and they don't want to admit it. Like, I don't do that.
It is a phenomenal 0 to 1 and it does nothing to keep you going after that.
I tell you what happened to me with my content, because, you know, so just launched a second podcast for a marketing company that I'm hosting and we've done Brain Dump. So you're talking about, for me, podcast I've been on, podcast I've launched in the last 4.5 years, we're talking 850 episodes somewhere.
Wow.
All right. And so my entire life, my coaching clients, my business partnerships, my networking has become from the podcast. Okay. So we just passed 600 last week as of recording this, right? On this one alone. So I said to myself, what would my life look like if at the end of it, I've done 10,000 podcast episodes? What would be create? I have no idea. What would my life look like if that happened?
Yes.
And, oh my God. So now the next stop is 2,500. Well, I already passed 100,000 downloads and we're past that, right? So that was the first marker. So what would it look like if it got to 1 million downloads and 2,500 episodes? Yeah. And then you just kind of like, there's not like, I need this many episodes for this, you know, I need this many down. Like, I don't even look at that stuff because that's not what it's about. It's a vault of information. It's a vault of conversations. And so I said, okay, well, that's one thing I can do. And so then what if I structure my whole life around that? What if instead of building a 1 year business plan, I built a 50-year business plan? Yep. And so like, these are the kind of ways that I've helped relieve some like day-to-day anxiety around certain things.
Nice. Very cool. And I think like you do such a good job of like attaching the number to who you become in the process, which I think a lot of people get lost on that of like, the number goes up, but they forget that who they became during the number going up is also different. And nobody can take that from you. Like, you can take my money, you go, whatever. But it's like, you ain't going to take the smile on my face. It's like, you're not going to take my ability to influence people. And I think that separating like who you become and then the number in the bank or the number on the scale or the whatever or the number of downloads, all these things, like reminding yourself of like you becoming, you doing the thing for the thing to be done is a good enough reason to do stuff. As well, the number will help you measure the progress so that you can get rewarded and keep doing it. So two like good ways to look at getting people to do stuff, which is basically what I do.
And when you're, and when you're, when you're, because I coach, you know, I've coached so many people myself in different aspects, addiction, business, life, you know, all the above. And no matter how old they are, where they're from, what they do, there's a commonality between like multiple things. Like I find 9 times out of 10, people just want to be seen and they want to feel respected or they want to feel loved, like for whatever reason. That's like the big thing. You know, that's like the core foundation. When you're going in to help these businesses and they're coming to you to turn around their businesses, are you seeing like some common themes that business owners or, what, you know, entrepreneurships?
Okay. What an excellent question. So I think that people want to be rewarded from other people in the same way that they reward themselves. So when you say being seen, being respected, etc., that just means that they want a high five for something that they would have given themselves a high five for. And like, I get emotional saying that one. Like the thing that you look in the mirror and you're proud of yourself for doing, if somebody that you respect gives you some form of attention, affection, approval right after you do that thing as well, that's like your whole world feels different after that. And so that's like a big,
I want to say something real quick, and I'm going to say it in the moment.
Yeah.
Us hiring closers.io, I don't even care about that. Getting to meet you and have this conversation is worth every dime we spent. So I just wanted to say that right off the bat, because the way that you frame this stuff is like so amazing. And I didn't want to interrupt, but I just had to say it.
I appreciate that a ton. Thank you so much. It, yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to work with you and hire all your friends.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. So back to you know, giving themselves a high five that they would give from the common problems in entrepreneurship or sales teams where you see them.
Well, so if we unpack like a general theme within modern society, you can, some people will label it as self-esteem, confidence, etc. Well, no wonder, because we have a huge influx of people that, so we have a huge influx of people telling you what you ought to want. You have a huge influx of inability to do things because of how distracting the environment is. And so you have all these desires that are like fake desires, because nobody has actually asked the question, what do I want? Because in order to answer that question, you have to answer the question, well, who the hell am I? And nobody ventures down that area alone, like without help of Mother Nature. Read between the lines.
Yeah.
And so nobody's going to venture down that one alone. And so with the huge influx of increasing desires and people telling you that you're not enough and you won't be enough unless you have more money on the Lamborghini and whatever, then you also have the increase of inaction, because like, why the hell would you do anything other than browse TikTok and masturbate? Like, it's literally, do anything else and you're a champion in this world. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how can you make your environment support what you want to do? And what do you actually want to do? Not what you ought to want to do. And that strikes me. Like, this is the whole thing. Like, the amount of business owners that I consulted something like 600 business owners in 18 months. And the amount of them that just wanted to scale because they were told that they needed to scale,
dude,
blew my mind.
Bro, we could, I was at a business conference, 1,000 business owners, some of my favorite people all over Twitter. I'm talking to a guy that has 15 businesses, another one that's running a $40 million shop, going to 100 million. They're savages. I mean, operators on like, you know, the kings. He looked at me and broke me apart. I still am not right. It's 3 months later. I'm still not right. So here I am, so excited to talk to them.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about what we're doing, what we're going to do next, the other things I'm working on. And he whips around and he goes, okay, all that's amazing, but why? And I just broke. My brain broke.
Yep.
He goes, I know, but your dream is to open a 1,000-acre ranch to help people with chronic pain and addiction. He goes, you don't need the businesses to do that. So why don't you just go do that? And he just walked away. And I'm like, you mother. I texted him. I'm like, you son of a. Because it was it really messed me up because it made me think, okay, you're doing all this over here. And this is part of your impact, but it's not the core reason, the mountaintop. Do you need to go through all this to get to here? And I still have, I don't have the right answer yet.
I think that everybody needs a carrot to chase. Everybody has a carrot to chase. Mm-hmm. And so do you just put this as I have to earn the right to do that I want or to do the thing that I want, which is a trap that a lot of people put themselves into. Of I've put the carrot far enough away and I will earn the carrot rather than I will have the carrot.
Jesus Christ. You just fucked me. Oh my God. That was the other piece of the pie. That was it. That was what I was waiting for. Cause I didn't see it in that context. I didn't, cause there's so much pain associated with getting sober at 36 and feeling my whole life was, I let my whole life go.
Yep.
And so there's this catch up play game at play. And do I need to trudge through enough shit so I can really go do the thing I want to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's an honestly valid question. If the thing that you want to do is help people be, what is it that, unpack that? What do you actually want to do?
Okay. So the long and short of it is I feel like in my 20s and 30s, I didn't have the environment or the right mindset to go build what I want to go build because all I care about is jobs, creating jobs, having great places to work. Okay. So when I got sober at 36, I'm now 39, 40, I finally got the right team around me, really have the right team around me in the last 6 months, maybe.
Yep.
All right. The savages to roll with me that had the same vision, same mission. So I told my fiance, I said, from 40 to 50, I just want to build as much as I can build. I want to travel as much as I can travel. I want to build everything. And then from 50 on, I want to create an entrepreneurship school where we actually teach people real stuff. I dropped out of college 3 times. And I want to open a 1,000-acre ranch where coaches host retreats on it, but we help people with chronic pain, addiction, real food, kind of a week process where they come out, reset their body. Right. There's cabins on the property. That's a long-term vision. But what I'm building over the next 10 years will sustain the money to facilitate the back half of that thing because I want to create an incubator for high school and middle school kids where we coach them and we can invest in their businesses. So they start businesses and entrepreneurship. So this 10-year building is going to, but what I didn't know in the process is when you're running a $5 to $9 million company with 40 employees, there's no better personal development program than running a business with that many employees. And that's been my last 12 months. And that's been my last 12 months. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Take Psycho-Cybernetics and shove it up your ass.
Dude, let me tell you, I could tell you stories that would melt your mind out of the back of your body of what's happened in the last 12 months. And a single one of them were on a fucking podcast or a book. Nothing prepared me for what's transpired.
No chance. I will say that knowing how to make decisions is a very useful skill.
Very.
And so pretty much everything I read now is about decision making and human behavior.
Okay.
And so that in along with what you just said of growing a business, having 40 people call you boss changes you.
not only changes you, it makes you feel inadequate, right? Because I'll tell you why. And I came up with a concept 8 months ago. And maybe it's just my sector, so it's a little different. Plumbing, HVAC, electric, right? Generators. Yeah. In my life, I have guys that are 16 working for me all the way up to 71, 50 years in the business. Here I am, 41, never knew what a furnace was till 12 months ago, never even been to Pennsylvania, right? So I said, I call leadership through the generations is the hardest form of leadership that exists on the planet.
Oh, interesting.
Because each generation was molded and built differently, and they need to be talked to and managed accordingly. My 18 and 25-year-old guys want to run through a brick wall, have no structure. My 60-year-old guys don't want rah-rah. They don't need to be pepped up. They show up every day. And they know more than you already. And so you need to find a way to motivate them in a different context. It's the wildest form of leadership I've ever seen.
How cool.
Yeah.
How are you, like, in terms of the way that you, how do you show your 6-year-olds, your 60 to 70-year-olds, how do you show them praise?
It's awesome. Well, they okay, this is a true story. So the previous owner's not so much like me, older cat, 66, been in the game since he was 16. I would text the managers and the sales guy every Friday and say, like, hey, guys, like, great week. Thanks so much for the hard work. And so for like 3 weeks, nobody's responding to me. Mm. And like, I didn't find out till 6 months later that my sales guys were like, well, who's this scam artist douchebag, like, telling us, like, good job. And then we realized, like, you're just a great person that wishes us a good time. Dude, my lead sales guy, my lead tech, I told him he was doing a great job. He didn't talk to me for a month. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? My other sales guy pulled me aside and he goes, he's 51 years old. He's had 2 jobs in his career. He's never been told he was doing a good job. He didn't know how to react. And I went, okay, hold on. We're going back to the basics here, dude. The basics of the basics. Like, hey, man, thank you. But what I did, 2 things happened. I looked at the team and I said, there's no way I can get in touch with all of them. I have to go older and I have to win their respect, and then they'll carry the baton for me, and they'll get the young guys to build on. So I went over to my lead commercial tech's house in the middle of winter. I wasn't even moved in yet here. And he said, I want to take you off-roading. And he lives on a mountain in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, sure, it's like snowing. And I thought it was going to be like 20 minutes. It was like 2.5 hours and there was no cell phone reception. I like sent a text to my fiance. I was like, if I die, I'm like in this city, like come get me, you know, blah, blah. But he was like sizing me up. He wanted to know who I was. He wanted to see who I was. He wanted to see if I was full of shit. Also, he literally told me everything that was going on with the company. So that was great. And then the next thing I did was, it was the dead of winter, and the oldest tech that we have, he had to run wire through a house, and it was like 15 degrees outside, and I put on overalls, and I climbed underneath the house and ran the electric wire so he didn't have to. He thought I was joking, and I was like, I ain't joking. And so those little actions of like showing that I'm not better than them has helped, but I would say the number one lesson I remember, this is the number one lesson I could share with any business owner, especially in the trades. Nobody needs to hear about your half ideas. If you bring something to them and you don't execute on it, you're done. If you bring it up or you say it's going to happen and it doesn't happen, you lost all trust. I don't care if it's $5, $100, a barbecue. If you say it, because I'm always coming up with new ideas. I've always got stuff that's like half baked. Yeah, you can't bring that to the team anymore. Not these guys. Because that entire sector is built on broken promises. And so it's just one of those things that I had to learn the hard way. Like, I didn't have a barbecue because we got busy, and I just got raked over the coals through HR. And then I had the barbecue and everybody was happy. And so it's like, you can't, it's just like, I know it sounds crazy, but it's just, you got, if you're going to bring it, it's got to be a full formed idea.
Yeah. So my goal in life is to make sure that there's not a 51-year-old who goes 30 years in the workforce without being told he did a good job again.
Right. Right.
Honestly speaking, like, it takes people, it takes an ounce of positivity to change the course. Like, the thing that people do 8 to 12 hours a day, I think the world would be a better place if they enjoyed doing that thing. And I think that they will enjoy doing that thing more if their leadership knew how to act appropriately, give them praise. So setting high expectations is one thing, and then holding them accountable. And then when they do the thing, make sure you tell them a good job.
Yes.
So, and then the thing that you ended with there, what did you end with?
like half-baked ideas, like do what you say you're going to do. Yeah.
So do you know, I found this so interesting when I found this out. In, do you know the most desirable trait that women seek in men? Mm-hmm. So the number one thing all women want a man to have. Mm-mm. Trustworthiness. And the way that that is measured is the amount of promises that they keep after they make them. So said another way, having a very high say-do ratio. If they say they do something, or if they say they will do something, they do it. And if they have a one-to-one, say they will do the thing, and then they do the thing, they have a very, well, they have a one-to-one say-do ratio. If they say they will do the thing, and then they do better than the thing that they said, they have a higher say-do ratio. And so that gives you two variables that you can look at. You can either say less stuff or do more stuff. It's not that complicated. And so it's like, just say less, make less promises, and then over-deliver. Under-promise, over-deliver. Like, you hear this language all the time. But it really comes down to, effectively, just like the promises that you make to yourself are one thing. And when you develop the habit of making promises and keeping promises to yourself, you begin to trust yourself. And that's where like this level of self-esteem starts to come from. Mm-hmm. This level of like self-importance, confidence, whatever you want to call it. But it's the same thing that other people have. It's like their confidence in you to follow through on what you said you were going to do. Yeah. And that's why like it's the number one trait that all women has. Is like, is he doing what he says he will do? Because mm-hmm. like every man says that they will do better. But how many of them actually do it? And so I thought
What's interesting about, and I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure, but buying an existing company and buying something that's been around for 25 plus years and starting something, you know, I realize they're two totally different people. And like, meaning that the startup needs fire and it needs all this stuff. And then like the longer version needs just stability, trustworthiness, right? And so I have a very magnetic energy that I like fast paced change, urgency, and all that stuff. And so what this business has taught me is that nothing is in my control. Nothing. Like, we're sending 12 crews out a day, all in people's houses and commercial projects that have to say yes, sir, yes, ma'am, the right way, have to install the stuff the right way. Like, all those things. And our only job for them is two things. Have leads and give them the information they need. The rest is not up to us. Mm. And it's such a weird game where one of the things I realize is the more open you are with them where things are, the more comfortable they are doing the work. I think a lot of business owners, and I'm not saying tell them everything, but a lot of business owners hide a lot of information from employees. And I think that creates the uneasiness in the trust. And that breaks the trust when they don't really know where they're going. One of my favorite quotes of all time is like, have a vision big enough for others to see themselves in it. Like, you have to give them what we're shooting for, but then revert back to the day-to-day execution, weekly execution, etc. And then each one of my departments, the plumbers, the commercial HVAC, the residential, they're all different personalities and they all have different needs. So then you have to break apart those things. So it's this piece, you know, this puzzle piece all around.
Yeah. Everybody needs a carrot.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to find out what they are. Speaking of that, since we're grilling me the entire podcast, which I'm totally fine with. I've cried like so many times in this podcast. Why did you know, a guy who's had so much success, millions and millions of dollars of sales, why did you 3 months ago started wanting to put out content? Why did you want to come on podcast?
Oh, great question. The biggest thing that I've realized is so many people have a job that they don't like having, a business that they don't want to have. And they do it because they listen to marketing. And people who do the marketing market in a way that they think they should in order to make money to have a business that they don't want to have. I was like, this is a broken circle. Somebody needs to say something. Like, when you think about it, it's like the marketing people say dumb things to get you to pay for stuff. and you pay for stuff to give them money, but they don't even know if they want more. They don't have a do they buy the watch?
Jesus Christ, dude. And this is a whole book. This is so great.
So they bought the Rolex because Grant Cardone had a Rolex. Why does Grant Cardone have a Rolex? Because he saw an there's status, and then the status gets the. Hang on a second. I kind of just want to like have coffee and kiss my wife in the morning. Like, why do I need a fucking $7 million business in order to do that? I'm very confused. So,
dude,
I was busy.
You have to get on X. You'll be a huge success because this is 90% of the conversation. This is so great.
It's just so ridiculous to me. I'm just watching so many people. And it's like, then you normalize like hard work and doing the hard thing and pushing through challenges. It's like, sure, as long as you're going the place you would like to be going.
Like a businessman and the fisherman. Stuff. You heard that story, right?
The what one?
The businessman and the fisherman?
No, tell it to me.
Oh my God, Steve, of all the people, are you ready? This is teed up for you. Like you've never even met a story. I'm going to find the real version. I will give you my version of it. So there's a businessman goes down to Mexico and he goes fishing. And they said, you got to talk to this guy named Juan. He knows where all the fish are. He's the best. So the businessman goes over, he's from the States, and Juan is sitting there having, you know, breakfast and coffee with his family. And Juan says, yeah, you know, I'll take you out. And so Juan takes him out and they catch so many fish. And Juan's like the best guy that they've ever had. And the businessman's like, dude, you are like so great at this, dude. He's like, this is so easy. He's like, I could go back to the States. He's like, I could raise money. He's like, we could get a fleet of boats. He's like, then we can like produce the tuna and everything that you cook. And he's like, yeah, he's like, we could do all this. And he's like, yeah, he's like, then he's like, okay. And then Juan's like, what do you do? And he's like, so we'll build this business up for like 10 years. We'll work our face off. And yeah. He's like, then you can sit on the beach and have coffee with your wife and cook. And Juan goes, yeah, but I already do that every day. I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. That's perfect. That's the best story. It's like so accurate. You ever see I love that so much. Thank you for that.
Dude, I'll find you the real story. It is so money. Dude, here's another one. Here's another one for you. We're on the podcast All right. with my coach down in Costa Rica and my other buddy, Anthony, who's like analytical, like encyclopedias, read every book that exists on the planet. Anthony and I are talking. Anthony's very quiet, but when he says something, like it'll rip your soul apart, right? So Omar's talking about, my coach coaches a lot of Jewish people, which is really weird because he's Hispanic, but he got in the Jewish community. And so every year, They have two weeks where, you know, they have two religious holidays back to back. They don't do any calls. They don't do any business. So he doesn't have clients for 2 weeks. And that always freaks him out, even though he's super successful. He likes being busy, right? And he's like, man, for like the first 3 days, he's like, man, I'm like beating myself up. I'm like, what do I do? And he's like, you know what? On the third day, he's like, I decided that I was going to, you know, put the laptop down and I was going to go take my dog for a walk in the morning. And I was going to take my wife to breakfast and I had just the most amazing day. Omar tells the story. And then Omar goes, yeah, you know, I need to really find more time in my schedule to do that more often, even when I'm working. And Anthony goes, or the time's always been there and you just don't take it.
Yeah.
And Omar just falls out of the back of his chair because that's the truth. Right? Time's always there. We just don't take it.
It's never been easier to drive, to fly to the beach.
Yeah. Like you know what I said the other day in a podcast that is like, I want to make it a shirt. You know what's never disappointed me ever in my life, in the history of the universe, 41 years on this planet, the million times that I've seen it, a sunrise.
Not once.
Not once.
Yeah.
And yet we spend our whole life not seeing them.
Yeah, we just make shit up. We just make shit up to chase carrots that don't matter for no reason.
Yes. That's dude, I'm telling you right now, you're dude, I need a PowerPoint presentation on the triangle of marketing because this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. I'm running a business. I need to grow it to $7 million. You know what's interesting? All my buddies that have podcasts, multiple businesses, anytime we hit the golf course, anytime, we talk about the same thing. Do we really need a scale? Like what? like, do we really need a scale? Like, yeah. It's a perfect example. I cut my teeth in Airbnbs, right? And that's a whole another can of worms. I could do 5 million episodes on that whole market and that whole the can of worms. Don't even get me going on that, okay? But every new entrepreneur into STR that I meet, they're like, man, I'm going to have 200 fucking units, man. I'm going to fucking do this shit. And I just lean over to them. I go, yeah, I'll talk to you in like 6 months. And I just walk away. And they're like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. And I go talk to that same guy in 6 months. He's like, well, I'm thinking about selling everything. Maybe I'll have 2 total. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought.
Because when you get into like, exactly. Like, yes. Just, of course. Like we try so hard at the things that God's made for play. Like, we try to win things that were made to be fucked around with. Like, why? Like, I get it. Like, you can't just be, like, a monkey with a fucking, like, hand pan all the time. Like, you can't just play the hand pan. Like, you also need a job to, like, pay for food and, like, support your community. But there was you ever see Blue Zones? It's a documentary on Netflix.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I didn't get much from the white American male commentary. I got a lot from listening to the Costa Rica people talk about how they live with purpose. Like, he wasn't doing much for me, you know? Like,
he wasn't doing much for you, but you got the purpose of it. Yeah.
Yeah, like there'd be 90-year-olds talking about living with purpose, taking care of plants, and he would be like, and as you can tell, how fascinating. It was like, dude, go away. Like, just film the old people living. And so they were just, all of them, speak about how they just have to continue to do something. Is that, like, you can't just go to the beach. You can't just dance. Like, you can't just spend time laughing. Like, there has to be those moments of, like, sorrow to experience joy. Same thing is there has to be hard work to enjoy the fruits of your labor. And so I think, like, that, like, the hard work makes the fruits that much more worth it. But I think a lot of people, like, dive deep into the hard work of, like, they have to and they should and they must. But it's like, no, like, the hard work is a choice. The hard work, like, you're here. It's a game. It's just a dance that you're fucking around with. Like, you're a monkey wearing a suit. Go away. Like, you're not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you just do the thing to enjoy the fruits a little bit more. And it's like, the harder you go down here, the more that you can enjoy the top moments. But you can say the same thing about the sorrow. Like, the harder the sorrow, the more happy the joy. Mm-hmm. And I think that that stands true for a lot of it. Like, it's just pure yin yang. There's balance with everything. And so does the guy who wakes up, drinks coffee, like, this is the play devil's advocate to my own argument. Like, does the guy who wakes up, drinks coffee, fishes on the dock, kisses his wife, reads all day, goes for a hike, like, does he enjoy that day to the 110% degree that, like, we would enjoy that day if we did that once every 3 months or once a week after we've just put in 3 months of really, really hard work into a project and we made all these jobs and all these careers and all these life changes for a whole bunch of other people? And so it's like, the way in which we make progress now as modern society is ridiculous. Like, we've never been able to make progress faster. It's like, AI can write me a business in like 4 hours. It's ridiculous. Because we have all this power now, we can make progress a whole lot faster. And so now our level of progress and our level of progress is increasing. Our level of work required to make the progress is decreasing. And so what's happening, at least what I'm concerned about happening, is we have more and more opportunities for joy, dopamine, porn, whatever, and lower levels of effort. So it's like everything's just becoming easier and easier and easier and easier and easier. And we also have so much that makes us comfortable. And so it's like the sunrise will inevitably get worse for a lot of humans. And that bums me out.
My that same buddy, Anthony, said there. He said the problem with society right now is not that there's too much bad. He goes, there's too much good and we don't see the good anymore.
Dude, there's too many things that make us comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we had to do it because everybody needed something to do. So we're like, well, this thing's moderately uncomfortable. This thing's moderately uncomfortable. Like, we basically solved for, you know, most of Western society, we basically solved most problems that people have. It's like, okay, you got a food over your house, you got food, or sorry, you got a roof over your house, you got food, like, you got it. Like, your survival needs are met. Okay, now how can we take this thing called surviving and make it easier? Okay, faster car, faster internet, better quality food. And then it's like everything's just started to become better and better and better. Mm-hmm. And now it's to the point where it's like I watch a YouTube video of a dude talking about philosophy and it looks better quality than if he was sitting in front of me. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, everything's amazing quality. It's like, how does anything get better from here? It's so hard to fathom. Like, I remember HD came out in 2014. I was like, this is the best TV we'll ever get. I saw a movie in IMAX last week. I was like, what the hell? Like, I can see the, like, everything's so clear. Totally. It's like, it's beyond feeling like you're there. And anyway, I bring this up to say is that, like, progress has consequences that make people comfortable. And we're going to continue to make progress because, like, human beings strive from making progress. Because it makes the sunsets and sunrises worth all that much more. Mm-hmm. And so the ones who focus on making progress instead of being the product for other people. Oh, that's a good one. Instead of being the product for other people's progress, just make the progress. Because you will be a lot more fulfilled, in my opinion.
So many good gems. I'm gonna be stealing those. So listen, I always love. I'm digging into like wild books that not a lot of people have read. I know you're a reader and you've probably read some obscure stuff. What's one or two that I need to look into book wise that maybe others haven't thought about?
So you know Adam Smith, the guy who wrote Wealth of Nations.
I've heard of him. I've never read a book by him. Yeah.
Okay. So he wrote a book 17 years before that.
Okay.
And it was all about decision making. I will get the title for you. It is phenomenal.
Awesome.
He was like 30 when he wrote it.
Anything else?
That's the one, dude.
Okay. I love it. Well, if anybody wants to reach out to you, they want to follow your journey, how would they do that?
Great question. I should know the answer to that. They can follow me on Twitter, subscribe to me on YouTube, follow me on Instagram. I think I sent you the links to
put. I'm going
to
give you a piece of advice because this happens to me all the time. I just bought my domain name, and it's AustinLinney.com. It's so easy. You never have to think about anything else.
Oh, that's genius.
Yeah, it's money. Everything houses there, all the business, all the podcasts.
Oh, great.
You just send me a message there. It's the way to go. Because I was fumbling around in the beginning when I started this whole thing, and I was like, what? No, this is just so easy. It's my name.
Yeah, there's like 11 fucking platforms at this point.
Dude, it's nonstop. You know, I think – what I've done with the platform race is kind of understood. Like, here's a perfect example. My Instagram and Facebook is there. People listen to it, but it kind of just like stopped working like a year ago. Randomly, I got on Twitter and found all business owners, all people that I wanted to learn from. And I've grown to like, you know, 5,500, you know, followers in like 1 year. Nice. And like everything's changed because I found the platform where people that I were interested in kind of lived. And that's like where a lot of my podcast guests come. It's where the conferences come from, et cetera. So, you know, you just have to find your people and kind of where they live. Like, frankly, I post on LinkedIn, but, you know, being there makes me want to throw up in my mouth. It's the driest, boringest shit on the planet where every real estate, and I'm just calling it like I see it, guys. Every real estate investor up there is selling some bullshit syndication or some bullshit course for the people that are bored out of their minds as well. And I'm no thanks. I'm good. So
couldn't agree more, dude. I like being on the internet to tell other people how I feel.
I love it. Awesome. Guys, well, if you like this episode, send it to a friend, share it around, and we'll see you next time.